Hi, I'm Sharon Sneer. You're listening to Grief's Gift, a podcast that explores stories of loss and grief and how and where to find within these painful times some of life's most beautiful gifts. We all have the freedom to make choices out of the losses we experience. Courageous, creative, collaborative, and conscious choices that so often become the gifts we hold most dear. So welcome to the conversations, meditations, and connections that are grief's gift.
Hello, and welcome to my podcast, Grief's Gift. This is Sharon Sneer, and I'm delighted to have you with me today. I've just returned from a wonderful trip through Scandinavia, and during that trip, I met a woman whose name is Corky Dory. She impressed me in a number of different ways. I'd like to introduce her to you, and then we're going to speak to her. Corky was one of six children and endured two near-death experiences. And had it not been for her strong spiritual upbringing, she believes she probably would not have survived. I had the pleasure of meeting Corky and her husband, Rick, on that trip. And I watched Rick's ever-present protective presence remain close to Corky's every step. So let's begin with how you two met. How you met Rick, because the events that nearly claimed your life occurred after you both married, and he has certainly proved his love and loyalty to you. So welcome to my podcast, Corky. I know that's your real name, but it's your nickname.
Yeah, my real name is Corrine Dory.
And it's a pleasure to speak to you. You're speaking from Florida?
Yes.
Okay, so isn't technology amazing?
It really is.
I know. So let's begin with how you met Rick, because I think he's been one of the mainstays, the cornerstone of your life since you met him.
And you know, the whole story of meeting him and our engagement and everything else, it's just like one comedy routine after another, because I was kind of a little goody two-shoes in school. And a friend of mine and I were at a wedding of another friend, and she was dating a guy, my friend Lisa was dating a guy from Colombia. Well, just because he was from Colombia, her parents wouldn't let her see him. So she wanted to explain to him what was going on. And I was never really restricted or anything, but I said to Lisa, we were at the wedding reception, and I said, well, do you know where Carlos is? And it was on New Year's Eve. And I said, do you know where Carlos is? And she said, yeah, he's at a New Year's Eve party. And I said, well, let's go crash a party. Your mom thinks we're at a wedding. And so we went and crashed the party. And Rick, who doesn't drink, was the bartender. And he was the only sober one there. So Lisa and Carlos left. And I sat there and visited with Rick all night because I didn't know anybody there. And after that, he asked Carlos for my phone number. His roommate went to school with me, and so he looked up my picture in the yearbook, got my name, compared it with the phone number Carlos gave him, drove by my house before he even called me. He was stalking me.
He was.
Yep.
Well, you know, he must have been completely overtaken by your beauty, because I've seen all your young photos, and you still are, but you were just gorgeous.
Oh, thank you. And you know, it's funny because whenever bad things are happening and he has to take care of me, like with my shoulder and everything, I keep telling him, just remember, you picked me.
Yeah, you've just had shoulder surgery.
I did, for the third time.
Wow. I don't know how you get through all of these things.
A lot of prayer.
So let's touch on that now, because I think that your spiritual beliefs are what has carried you through so many of your experiences. And we're going to talk about some of those experiences. But tell me about how faith has been probably the most important thing in your life.
Well, my parents were both very devout religious, and my grandparents. And so I always had a strong faith. And I don't know, as I grew, it just my faith grew. And Rick was very religious when I met him. Well, he still is. And I think that's one of the things that attracted me to him. But I know for a fact that if it wasn't for my faith, I wouldn't be here.
And tell me a little bit about that. Is your faith based on Christianity or a spiritual belief?
Yes, Christianity. And, you know, I know that, you know, God has done wonderful things for me. And like, even when my mother was dying and she was on hospice, we were taking care of her. We were living at her house and taking care of her. She doesn't live too far. She didn't live too far from us. And my brother came down and helped also. And, you know, there were times we'd have conflicts and everything and all the stress of it, because it was 6 months that we did it and all the stress of it and everything. I remember driving back to my house one day, my brother and I had had an argument and I was just crying and crying. And I was like, okay, God, not my will, but thine be done. But could you work with me? You know, but, you know, you've got to accept whatever he gives you.
Well, you also have a relationship, as I hear, that's a friendship, you know, best friend. Can you give me, you know, can you work with me? It's not
with
like
God?
Blind faith. Yes.
I talk to him all the time. I mean,
right.
Even if it's something as simple as, would you please take away this stomach ache? Would you help me find my lost ring? You know, something like that. I talk to him all the time.
Right. Right.
And he's always been there for me.
Always been there for you. So when was the first time you realized that God, Jesus, I'm not sure who you're praying to, was there for you?
Well, I got an interesting story. I was probably only about 4 years old. And I remember that they used to say, you know, just talk to God, he'll answer you. Yeah. And, you know, you hear the story of where God calls, I don't even remember who it was, Elijah or somebody. And so this one time I was laying in bed and I was saying some prayers and I'm like, you know, God, you got to give me an answer. And I went to sleep. And in the middle of the night, I woke up this booming voice. I mean, I thought the house was shaking. And I'm like, God, you need to whisper because you're going to wake up mom and dad. And it was funny. I got up the next morning and I went into my parents and I said, did you hear anything last night? And they're like, no. I said, did it rain last night? And they're like, no. And I'm like, okay, God was talking to me. And I don't remember what the question was. And I don't remember what his answer was, but I do remember that he talked to me. And I think that probably was the start of always turning to him.
Yeah. And did you ever go back into prayer or meditation and ask, what was it that you said to me?
No, I never asked because I don't think it must not have been important.
No. So it was more like confirming his existence to you. And that led you on the way to saying, well, I can't not believe anymore.
Exactly.
Right. So let's have a look at one of these near-death experiences. And the first one happened through birthing your child.
Right. I was 23 years old, mm-hmm. and I had what they call placenta previa. And mm-hmm. the placenta was over the cervix. So they knew I wouldn't be able to have a normal delivery.
Yeah.
And they were afraid that I would start hemorrhaging. And so they actually took the baby 5 weeks early. And they ran tests, they made sure the lungs were developed and everything. And they did the surgery. And, you know, coincidentally, my mom had a cousin who had the placenta previa years before and had died. And she was a nurse and had a patient that died from that. So of course my mom was very nervous the whole time, you know. And I had an excellent, excellent doctor. And it was one of those kind of divine interventions because they had just moved the operating room. Instead of recovering on the maternity floor, they moved it to a different floor where the nurses were more one-on-one. And so after they did the C-section and they took the baby and everything, they couldn't stop the bleeding. And I kept hemorrhaging. And I remember all of it. And, you know, they say, oh, you don't remember that. And I started telling them different things that were going on. And they're like, oh, my God, you do remember. And they actually had to bring Rick in to hold my hands because I kept pulling them away from me and clawing at them. And they were trying to stop the bleeding. And they called my doctor who had gone to another hospital for a delivery. And he came back, you know, and within 2 hours of the C-section, they were doing a hysterectomy. And his assistant, who they actually made house calls the last 2 months I was pregnant. And his assistant was going on vacation, so wasn't there to help with the C-section. And he came in to help with the hysterectomy. And I looked up at him and I said, you tried to leave without saying goodbye to me. And he looked at the other doctor and he goes, does she know she's dying? And I said, I'm fully aware of it. And I have two choices. I can either panic and get hysterical, or I can just not worry about it and let God take care of it. And he goes, you're doing just fine. And they could only give me enough medicine to start the surgery. And then they gave me medicine to paralyze me.
Why did they give you so little medication?
Because my blood pressure was so low, it would have killed me.
My
husband said my hair had all turned blue and my lips were blue, my fingernails. I was losing all the oxygen and everything. My blood pressure was less than 50 over 20. So, you know, it was, yeah, you know, I wasn't there.
No.
And so they did the surgery. And then after that, I just came around. And actually, when they were doing the surgery, I came to during the surgery. I said, okay, God, I know people can only take so much pain before they pass out. Now would be a good time. And it was kind of funny because everything was black and I was looking for the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
And there was no light. It was pitch black. And yeah. It was like, okay, you're either not dying or you're going to hell and it's too late to worry about it. So, you know, what are you going to do? And I just said, God, please let me live long enough to raise my children.
Right.
And he did.
And
my youngest, the one that I had the problem with, is 42.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And grandchildren?
I have three grandchildren from our first son, and they live up in Orlando, so about 3 hours away from us.
And your second son?
He's not married. He doesn't want kids, and he just works a lot. Both of the boys are firefighters like their father.
Uh-huh.
And I just think that he doesn't want somebody telling him what to do. And
okay.
Ironically, I had to get 25 units of blood transfused for the hysterectomy because I lost so much blood. And unfortunately, at that time, they didn't know about hepatitis C, and I got it. And
right.
So, you know, I think it was like 12 years later, I ended up having to go through the interferon treatment for that. And
yes.
Fortunately, I was one of the few that it worked the first time.
Right.
And so
has that left you with any after effects?
I have a lot of built-in barometers. I could tell you the weather very reliably, which isn't necessarily fun. But other than that, from that surgery, no, I really don't. And the hepatitis C, it worked the first time and it's been dormant. They said it's undetectable, so they consider me cured.
Beautiful.
So, but my son likes to joke and say, yeah, I tried to kill mom. She couldn't take the hint.
It sounds like humor really carries you through as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you lighthearted and funny before all of these things happened?
I don't know that I was ever funny, but I enjoyed a good joke. And my father was very witty.
Yes.
And my brother and now my husband and my sons are all witty, you know.
Yes.
And so I can't say I'm a funny person, but I definitely enjoy humor. And you can't take things too seriously because basically sometimes it doesn't matter.
And do you think that's your spiritual belief coming through, that so many people do take things so seriously, but you've come to an understanding that it's not worth it?
Yeah, you just have to appreciate what you have.
That's what you do.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I could live in a fancy house and whatever, but I don't want to because it doesn't mean anything. And, you know, we have a lot of hurricanes here. And my brother was calling me one time. A hurricane was coming and we weren't in an evacuation zone. And he's like, oh, you're so worried about your material things that you're going to stay there and protect them. And I said, Mike, if God wants my material things, he can take them. I don't care. I'm not leaving because they said don't leave, and I don't want to be stuck on the highway without being able to get gas.
Yeah.
And, you know, but as far as material things, I mean, I have a nice house and I have, you know, nice things, but it's all material. The most important thing to me is people and faith.
Yes. Yes. And so that moves us forward a little bit in your life, where the next near-death experience happened.
Yes. Okay, when Jason, the youngest, was 13, I had gone to the high school to work at the concession stand, and it was pouring rain. And my husband was with our oldest son at his Eagle Scout Board of Review, mm-hmm. and Jason was home by himself, and so I was driving home from the high school. I remember getting in the car and I remember driving toward the exit. I don't remember getting to the exit, and I don't remember which way I turned or anything else. The next thing I knew, I was in the car. Basically, I was making a right-hand turn and a car made a left-hand turn and T-boned me and hit me right on the driver's door. And fortunately, I had a witness that was behind me, and she got out of the car, and you know, a lot of this stuff I learned reading the transcripts from that the witnesses gave, you know, and she said that I was like gasping for air, and she was, the car was locked, and so she was banging trying to wake me up, you know, and so the next thing I remember was, I felt like I was choking. They were actually putting a C collar on me to stabilize my neck, but I was thinking that somebody was twisting a towel and choking me.
Right.
And my mom and dad, God love them, drove up on the accident. And my mom was hysterical. She's like, that's quirky. That's quirky. Stop the car. And he's like, Mary, we can't stop the car. And she says, I'm jumping out then. And he stopped, you know, and she gets out of the car. Well, it was really kind of funny because, I honestly think that hearing her voice is what brought me back.
Right.
And they said that my heart stopped a couple times. They had to shock me. And but I heard my mom's voice and I said, Mom, what happened? What's going on? And she said, you were in a really bad car accident. And I said, well, how's the other guy? And, you know, I have no memory of the accident. And I often wonder, did I know it was a guy? Did I see him coming? Because I don't remember any of that. I think God gracefully doesn't let you remember some things, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And she said he was just fine, you know? And then I passed out again. Well, my grandmother had died in January of that year, and this was September. And I must have been when my heart stopped again, but the next thing I know, I'm walking into a room and my grandmother is facing me and she's talking to a room full of people. And she was 92 when she died. But in this vision, she looked like she was maybe in her 60s or 70s.
Right.
And she looked up at me and she said, oh, hi, honey. And I said, Grandma, I need you to do me a favor. And I don't know if it was hearing my mom's voice and the fear in my mom's voice or what. But I said to my grandmother, I said, you need to tell God not to take me yet because I don't think mom can handle it. Because my mom was very close to her mom and she was still grieving for her mom. And she and I are very close, or were very close. And so I just think, you know, that she wouldn't have survived me not living. And my grandmother said, honey, you're going to be just fine. And it was a three-year recovery ordeal, but I never worried about it because my grandmother said I was going to be fine. And
wow. So there weren't moments of, you know, depression and feeling, is this ever going to end? And all of those questions people ask, you just carried on?
Yeah, well, I had it after the car accident. I was bedridden for 5 months because I had to have the hysterectomy when Jason was born. So they knew I wasn't going to have any more kids. So rather than put plates in me, because my hips were all crushed and I had a whole bunch of medical issues. But so they felt that if they just stabilized me and I stayed bedridden, the bones would heal and everything would fall in place. So I was bedridden for 5 months. Well, then I went, no, 3 months. And then I went through therapy to learn how to walk again. And so, because my entire pelvis was crushed. And so while I was going to therapy.
How did they fix that? I mean, did you have artificial hips put in or how did
No, because while I was bedridden, the bones actually healed themselves. They grew back together. Wow. So, I mean, there's scar tissue around them, but where they were going to put steel plates in if I could still have kids or whatever. But the bones fused themselves back together. And so by staying bedridden, you know, it grew back together.
Okay.
So yeah, I just had to lay there for 3 months and tear my hair out and said a lot of prayers then.
Yeah, I bet. Who looked after you in those months?
Well, the fire department was really good because they let Rick work day shifts because he normally works 24 on and 48 off. And they let him work just during the day. And then he would be home with me at night. And we had a whole bunch of friends that took shifts and came and sat with me. And our church, the scouts, and there was one other group brought meals for us for 2.5 months. Rick never had to cook. And they would come and take turns babysitting. They called it babysitting. They would come and sit with me and stuff, you know. And we just had a really good time, actually, you know. They occupied my mind and stuff like that. And it was good for them too. I think, you know, they really got to appreciate things and, you know, learn different things and stuff. So Rick was able to just work during the day and then he'd be home at night. And we had the hospital bed in my living room and I'd have to take the wheelchair and he'd wheel me in there to give me a shower and stuff. And it was quite a process, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, it just really makes you appreciate a simple thing like walking.
Definitely. Because this podcast is called Grief's Gift, I'm wondering whether there was any grief for you.
Oh, yeah. I know at one point, you know, I'm stuck in the bed and I can't do anything. Mm. And I remember I had a neighbor come over and was staying with me. It was a guy. And I said to him, you know, I said, I know the Lord loves a cheerful giver, but I says, what am I giving? I said, I can't do anything. I'm just sitting here like a bump on a log. And he goes, you're giving other people a chance to stop thinking about themselves and do something for someone else.
That's right.
And it was like, I never thought about that, you know? And, I had pity parties, but I only had a few, you know, and you have to stop and think, well, okay, it could have been worse. You know, I can't say that dying would have been worse. It would have been worse for those that lived, but for me, it would have been a whole lot easier because the recovery was horrendous. It was literally a year and a half to 2 years because I was bedridden for those 3 months. Then I started doing therapy. Well, then what happened was my diaphragm had torn in the accident and they didn't detect it.
Yeah.
Well, then my stomach and my large and small intestines pushed through the diaphragm into my lung and collapsed my lung. And so I went from a normal diet to junk food to I couldn't even eat.
Right.
And they finally ended up doing surgery to pull my stomach out of my lungs. And so now I have a damaged lung. I have to sleep on my left side because otherwise I can't breathe. And I have a lot of health issues. And the doctors have said, you know, it's going to get worse before, you know, it's not going to get better. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the longer you stay active, and that's one of the reasons that we like to travel so much, because Rick said, I know there's going to come a day where you can't travel. And so I want to be able to look back on all our trips and say, oh, remember this, remember that, instead of being negative and, you know, resentful of what you missed.
Well, there's that beautiful saying, you never regret what you didn't do. What you did, you only regret what you didn't do.
Exactly.
So you're doing everything you can.
Yep. We're trying.
So because you didn't really have the grief that I'm talking about, the loss of your health hasn't seemed to given you much contemplation.
Oh, yeah, it gives me a lot of problems.
But emotional or physical?
Mostly physical, but that can't help but seep into emotional, because you have moments and you have times where it's like, God, why didn't you just take me? It would have been so much easier.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I told my husband, I said, you know, dying isn't hard on the people that die. It's hard on the ones left behind.
Right.
And so by me still being here, which I know he's very glad I am.
Yeah.
You just have to tolerate, I guess, the inconveniences and the pain and the, you know, cause I mean, he took me to a job that he was going to tear a roof off because I have a built-in barometer that's better than the weatherman.
Yeah.
You know? And so, you have to put up with those. You know, what else are you going to do?
Yes, I understand. Now, we're running out of time. So the last question I need to ask, it's so amazing how quickly time flies when we're having a conversation. I really don't want to leave you. But have you discovered something about yourself, having undergone all these experiences that you didn't know existed, that has given you a sense of, aha, that is something I really am grateful to know about me now?
I think I've developed a more positive attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't sweat the small stuff because it's not worth it. We were on a trip up in Canada, and one of the guys that was our boat captain had a brain injury and was very explosive personality.
Yeah.
And I kind of felt bad for him because my father died from the same thing. This guy, unfortunately, lived through it. And everybody that was on our boat, there were six of us, and they were all so negative, and they were just, you know, I didn't pay good money to put up with this, and they were just carrying on. And I thought, I don't need to listen to this. And I just went outside, and I was standing there looking out at the bay, and one of the guides from the fishing place came over, a young hockey player. And he's like, are you okay? And I go, yeah, but you know, life is too short. And I said, I've already died twice. And I said, to me, all this is bonus. And I said, I can't waste my time on the negative thoughts. I just, you know, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
And
your energy and your mental ability, your mental strength is too important to waste on those
things you can't control.
That you can't change. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and you know, I know that down the road, and like Rick said, we know that pretty soon I'm not going to be able to travel and I'm going to have a lot of health problems and everything. So that's why we do what we do now, so that when we are stuck home, we can say, remember when we did this and I'm glad we did that, rather than I wish I would have.
Absolutely.
You know, and just be grateful for everything you have.
So taking life with both hands and living it, because you are aware that this is a gift that you've been given, and you don't want to waste a minute of it.
Absolutely.
And does that belief and energy get imparted onto other people, not just your friends and family, but do you share that in a way that is inspiring?
I hope so, and I think I do. For 11 years, I was a coordinator of a Spanish exchange program for students to improve their English, and they would come over for a month.
Yeah.
And one of our first students ended up being a counselor the last year. And he was at our house, and some of the people were wanting to meet with somebody. And I said to Jesus, I said, you know, I know I'm just the coordinator, but, you know, I'd really like, and he goes, stop right there. He goes, don't ever let me hear you say you're just the coordinator. He says,
yeah, exactly.
Do you know how much good you have done for so many people? And he gave me this little lecture and everything. And I was like, I never really thought of it like that, you know? And
yeah, I think that's really important, that although we don't have to walk around the world saying, I do wonderful things, I think it's also really important to acknowledge that we do at times, and not to have false modesty.
Well, and it's also important to me to appreciate every gift you have, because everything is a gift. You know, the fact that I met you, that was a gift, you know, and being able to travel, that's a gift. Not everybody gets that.
Yeah.
And so you just have to appreciate.
What would you say in your, sorry to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
But what would you say to those people that don't have anything like your life? How would you impart some of your wisdom to those that financially and physically can't move forward like you, that have lost all their children? There's wars going on around the world right now.
Right.
And people have lost their partners, their husbands, their children, their babies. How would you impart some of that positivity or that belief to them?
Ooh, that's a hard question. I don't know.
But it's a question that is really important.
Yeah.
Because you can't live in your own bubble.
I more try to lead by example.
Yes.
You know, I'm not going to preach to somebody. I'm not going to, you know, it's up to you to make it, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
You know, I just hope that by my example, they can, because sometimes people will meet me and then when they find out some of my history, they're like, oh my gosh, I had no idea. How can you stay so positive? And I said, because every day is a gift. I said, this is all bonus, you know?
Yes, yes.
So you just have to appreciate what you have.
You have a blessing of being a very optimistic person.
I think so, yes, I think so.
Yes,
I try.
And some of that optimism has to rub off on other people, even if they're not blessed with such an optimistic outlook. So I think that lead by example.
Well, and also you try to help those people. You do what you can to help them.
And you do that, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I try.
Yeah, I'm sure. And I'm sure you succeed.
I hope so.
So we've got 2 minutes and 42 seconds. You've got another trip coming up. Where are you going?
We do. Actually, we have two. We're going to take my granddaughter to Iceland for her graduation gift. And our youngest son is going with us, but we also have a friend who's dying from cancer and he wants to take a trip. And so we're going to Africa with him in June.
Oh, wow.
So that was kind of a quick, you know, that just kind of fell in our lap kind of a thing, you know. But
are you going to South Africa or?
We're actually going to Zimbabwe, Botswana, and Zambia.
You're going to have the best time. I have done Africa with my late husband.
Oh, great.
It was just the most extraordinary journey. Really fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. We've been to South Africa a few times.
Yeah.
But we've never been to these other places. And they haven't really traveled that much. So, and because of his help, they said, we really want you guys to go with us so you could help with if Steve has any issues, you know.
And also to keep him recognizing the gift.
Yeah. Yeah.
Corky, we've got to go. I'm sorry because I have the end of Zoom and I've got to finish off and I don't want to do it without thanking you. So thank you so much.
Well, it's been my pleasure and it was great to see you.
I hope you continue to be an inspiration. I will upload this onto my podcast.
Okay.
And I imagine a lot of people will love to hear your story. So thank you so much for sharing.
I hope it helps somebody.
Me too, I'm sure.
Okay. And how can I see that?
Oh, you go. I'll send you all the information. I'll send you to my website, which is sharonsneer.com. Not difficult to find. And my podcasts are on Google and Apple and everywhere you go for a podcast. Grief's Gift is there.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Okay. Okay. It was nice talking with you, Sharon.
You too, Cookie.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Grief's Gift. If you resonate with what you're hearing, please don't forget to let your friends and family know. And if you have your own experience that you would like to share, please contact me on www.sharonsneer.com or on my email, sharon@sharonsneer.com.